Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullerstubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has reneged on his Valentine's Day promise. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Oh, you're much better than next week's audience, as it turns out. I guess, you'll see when this goes out. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was talking to Adam and Joe the other day. Do you remember them from the 90s? They're good, weren't they? They call it Rellastapa. And then just copied everything I did. No, they didn't. Welcome. Yeah, look, it's just shortly after Valentine's Day when we're recording this. And if you are aware of my stand-up material, know that I made a promise that on the first Valentine's Day with my wife that I'd buy a Ferrero Rocher every year on Valentine's Day, and then it was doubling every year. So this year, 2023, I should have bought a 32,768 Ferrero Rochers, which I did not do. In fact, I forgot it was Valentine's Day. We were on holiday. I'd passed some Ferrero Rochers in a shop. Thought, oh, maybe I could get those just for fun. And then I didn't even realise it was Valentine's Day the next day. My wife said she'd bought me a Valentine's Day card, but she'd left it at home. So I said I'd done that as well. But we're home now, and she hasn't given me that Valentine's Day card. And I'm not mentioning it because I haven't got one either. When we were on our way back from a holiday, I got a tweet saying, my friend is sitting two seats away from you on the train. But I was driving my car at that time, so I thought that was... And they sent me a picture of her excited face. And there was quite a sort of WhatsApp chat that they sent me in the end. It wasn't me. It was another man pretending to be. Well, I think he just had my face. It wasn't Charlie Borman. They said they take photos. There's a lot of men out there who look like me, and some of them pretend to be me. And some people go, are you Richard Herring? And they go, yes, and have photos taken with them. I'm just worried that one of the Richard Herrings, the fake ones, will do something terrible. And I hope one of them's getting some. That's all I'm saying. I hope one of them's getting something off of being me. It would be nice to see. But there we go. Look, we're going to crack straight on. We have an amazing guest for you this week. She is probably best known for her appearance on Cats Make You Laugh Out Loud. That is... She was also in the greatest Christmas TV ads. It was a very hard choice. Will you please welcome the amazing Zoe Lyons, ladies and gentlemen? Zoe Lyons. Oh. Come in. Sit down.
know, I have to think about Cats Make You Laugh Out Loud every time I have a wee because they paid for my bathroom. It was a time in my career, Richard, when there wasn't a lot going on. There have been many of those periods. And this production company were making lots of these programs of so-and-so makes you laugh out loud. Yeah. Did Budgerigars make you laugh out loud? Kids make you laugh out loud? Ex-convicts make you laugh out loud? They just kept coming. They kept coming. And I said to my wife, and I went, I can't do any more of the. I'm dying on the inside. And she went, get out there and do that. We need a new bathroom. So, yeah, every time I take a dump, I think of the Cats.
And they make you laugh. You should be laughing out loud in that case on the toilet. That's fantastic. Look, it's lovely to see you. It's been about 5.5 years, I think, since you were last on the show.
Yes.
Time flies by. You've had quite the time. I mean, we both had quite the time of it in lockdown. And both of us have probably managed to make a show out of our lockdown experiences.
Thank God for adversity.
But you've had a pretty, pretty tough.
Well, I think what happened with me in lockdown is, you know this, a lot of comedians, as soon as lockdown happened and the pandemic sort of, you know, took all of our work away, or the majority of our work away, there were some horrific Zoom gigs that happened. But I think a lot of comedians went into free fall panic as to how they were going to get their content out there, how they were going to stay vital, and, you know, people still need to see me. And I went completely the other way and just sort of reacted in an extremely human way to the pandemic and thought, I'm probably never going to live, well, fingers crossed, I'm probably never going to live through something like this again. I'm going to really roll with it. So I went full sort of Hunter S. Thompson. I mean, 11 o'clock, rum's in the garden, hello. But I also, during that period, experienced what I can now describe as a massive midlife crisis and sort of borderline mini breakdown. It was, only because I had the time for it.
Yeah.
Prior to that, I'd just been too busy. Yeah. You just crack on, don't you? Yeah, it's true. Only when you stop that you go, fuck, bits of this are really shit. Yeah, bits of this are really not working for me. So, yes, it was a stressful time. And then as a result of the stress, my hair fell out. I got alopecia. Lost most of it. It's sort of coming back.
Good. Well, I lost a ball and it's not coming back.
No, yours isn't going to grow back, is it? Yours is. I was thinking, actually, my hair looks a bit like yours at the moment.
Oh, does it?
Does it? Yeah. I'll show you. I haven't. Oh, okay. This is the first time I've taken my hat off on stage.
That's amazing.
For a very long time, and I'm very aware of the irony of exposing myself on a podcast. So just imagine a slightly less hirsute Richard Herring. We've got similarities going on here, haven't we?
Yeah.
I've got this little bit here in the middle that's refusing to grow. Absolute bastard. Look, I've got two bits on the side that have decided, right, we're going to go for it again. And then just a bit in the middle, right in the middle of my forehead, that's gone, nah.
Yeah.
I like being shiny. I like being shiny. So, yeah, I rub it every day like a sort of genie lamp and hope it'll come back at some point.
Yeah,
Not too soon, though, because I'm on tour and my tour's about being bald. I know the irony, you know. You get a game show and your hair falls out and you think, oh, that's not good timing. And then you write a show about going bald and it grows back and you go, can we please just sync up diaries on this shit? Because it's not helping.
I mean, as a comedian, and as I know myself, you go through some adversity and there's a part of you eventually, maybe not straight away, but there's a part of you thinking, oh, well, hold on, this isn't the worst thing. So how long did it take you for me, it was pretty immediate. I thought this
was
some material in this. But did it take you a while to think this? Because I think to lose your hair...
Mm.
I mean, I was going to say for a woman, but I think it's also true for a man.
It's totally true for men as well. It's totally true for men. I completely empathise with guys that lose their hair as well. Yeah, yeah.
It's a really big thing.
It's a really big thing, and particularly when you're on stage, you are exposed that's what you do, for your career. You present yourself in front of people. And I was in denial about it for ages. It really was. I don't think anybody can nuke it. And it was like strands, you know. And then I had to hit that point where I'm going to have to deal with this. I'm either going to have to stop doing what I'm doing because I'm not happy and I don't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Or I bite the bullet and do that thing that, thank God, we as comedians are able to do and start talking about it and laughing about it and go out, Zoe, and get a wig so you can get yourself back on telly. So that's what I did. Yeah. And then so I got a wig and it's a bit, it's weird wearing a wig for the first time. You just think everybody knows you're wearing a wig. Like, you imagine everybody's eyes are just going to the top of your head, you know, at the concert, and you just immediately want to blurt out, it's a wig! And nobody noticed it because it's a really good wig. But the first three telly jobs I got after getting my wig were all outside in high wind conditions. And I was like, I'm going to have to get a chin strap for this as well. I'm going to have to gaffer it on. So,
Yeah, it's tough, but it's sort of, you know, I saw you interviewed about this, and it's a similar thing to me. And, you know, I did discuss with my wife, well, I was going to discuss whether I've had cancer or not and keep it to myself. But by talking, I decided, you know, I sort of had to talk about it.
Mm.
But by talking about it, it was very helpful, I think, for other people, but mainly
for yourself.
For myself.
Totally. Totally. I mean, I've met so many amazing people. Having started talking about it on stage, and I've had, you know, so many people get in touch with me, and I've made lovely connections. But selfishly, it was me I was helping. It was very cathartic, and it took the sting out of it. Yeah. It really took the sting out of it. Yeah, but it took me a while before I thought I was able to talk about stuff on stage, because lots of stuff happened in those sort of 2 years. Like, my wife and I separated. I ended up living on my own for a while in what I now lovingly refer to as my divorced daddy flat, and just me, a chair and a can of Heineken, and went through an awful lot, and we had therapy for the first time in my life. That's a good thing,
right? Okay.
Yeah.
Good to talk.
Oh yeah, I sort of enjoyed, I looked forward to it, because it was a time when we didn't have any gigs.
Yes.
So I would write stuff down during the week that I knew I was going to say to my therapist. I was like, that'll make her laugh. She'll crack up at this. Hang on. I'll make that sound like I'm coming from a very vulnerable position and then whack it back with a punchline at the end. She'll love that. And when we finally sort of finished our sessions, and I was rewilded, so to speak. Her last words to me were, "Well, Zoe, it's certainly never been dull." And I was like, "I've won therapy."
But it's also great for you to be talking about. You know, again, I think like a midlife crisis is so associated with, well, that kind of midlife crisis is so associated with men.
Yeah.
Bikes, you know, you bought a sports car.
I bought a sports car. I think when we think about, because there's a lot said now about women in their middle age, and thank God we talk a lot more about the menopause and, you know, the changes that women go through and the struggles that we have. But in the same way, there is a slightly cliched approach to female midlife, where we sort of go, she's a bit weepy and a bit clammy, and, you know, she's put on a bit of weight, but she's trying to sleep fit. Whereas blokes can go off, they go fuck something 25 years younger, buy a car, sit in the shed, you know, do all of those things. And I sort of went that way. I mean, you know, did sit in the shed for a bit. I sort of went that way.
It's quite empowering to go crazy in that direction and...
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. The sports car was a... I mean, that was... I mean, it's silly now, isn't it? I bought two, Richard. I bought two because I bought one and then I eventually sort of came to my senses and went, this isn't going to make you happy, so is it? And I was like, no, it's not. Why isn't it going to make you happy, so? And I went, because it's not the right sports car. So, so I sold it and bought another one. And just during those times when there was no work, just drove around with the roof down and my wispy bits of hair flapping about. Classic midlife crisis.
You're back with your wife.
Spent a year apart.
Right.
We spent a year apart, which I think is, that's a significant block of time to spend apart. Yeah. We've been together for 25 years. So to spend a year apart is really significant. And what is so, lovely for me coming out of the back of this is to learn that actually, you can actually find a new relationship within that partnership that you've had for so long. We have a much better understanding of each other. We had to be apart to sort of find out who we were, to come back and be better, a better couple.
Yeah.
And Yes, I see it sort of as a gift now. It was very tough. It was a really hard couple of years. It was really, I was very depressed and it was very tricky. But I'm so grateful for all of the things that I've learned off the back of it and, yeah, the new life that I have. And, of course, the material for a show. Thank God for hard times for comedians. Because, yes, and then eventually you go, oh, I reckon I can make this funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, you everything is potentially funny, right?
Yeah.
You know, even things, I mean, I think both the things we've been through are, but people say, well, you can't joke about cancer and you can't joke about female hair loss.
Yeah.
But of course you can, you know, there, because it's not laughing at the condition, it's about laughing at the what happens
what
around
happened to it and your situation with it. And, you know, yeah, exactly that. And it, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's great. So the tour is ongoing at the moment. It's called Bald Ambition. It's all over the... You're doing 40 or so dates?
I am doing 40 or so dates. It's a lot of dates. I've been in a lot of service stations. Do you ever go into service stations and go, where the hell do these people come from? You never see posh families in service stations. A friend of mine said the other day, where do posh people piss when they're on the road? And I genuinely don't know, unless there's a sort of secret posh pissing area. I don't know that we're not privy to. Excuse the pun.
Good point.
Yeah, where are they?
That's a good point. I accidentally, you get to know the good services from the bad services when you're a comedian, but I haven't toured in such a long time that I accidentally stopped at Watford Gap the other day.
Oh, nice. Schoolboy era.
It was like going back in time.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like incredible.
It's Watford.
And you sort of think, why? I mean, there must be a lot of money in service stations, and there, you know, there aren't that many of them. Because everything's very expensive.
Yeah, and a cheese toastie now will set you back about 80 quid. Yeah. It's, yeah. I'm always tempted to buy the shit as well that you sort of walk through. You've got two camp chairs. I don't need two camp chairs. Should I get two camp chairs? Who pops in for a piss and comes out with two camp chairs? I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, memory, that's a poor one as well. Yeah.
Well, I was sort of surprised. I just thought I'm on the M1, I'm safe, it'll be fine. There wasn't even a Waitrose, a Pret a Manger. Nothing.
Just slumming it.
You had to... A Costa sandwich was the best you could get there.
Yeah.
I decided to have lunch in Wolverhampton. That's how bad it was.
Well, will you eat a full... Will you go out for dinner on your own when you're on tour?
No, I just tend to sandwich things up, basically.
Do you?
Yeah, I sometimes might... I might go to... occasionally to Renando's or something.
Yeah, like a... Yes, yeah. Well, every now and again, I'll sort of spoil myself to a proper meal.
Yeah.
I like to sort of proudly walk in, confidently walk in. I love eating on your own. And they sort of look at you like, where's your family? Where's your other people? And you go, party of one. And, and then they... And have a little proper meal by myself.
Yeah.
I enjoy that.
I think, it's a thing where you talk about in your previous show I was watching on Next Up. The entry-level human, which is a great, great show. But you talk about, getting older and becoming sort of more independent. There's a very funny routine about why Brexit's happened is because people just get older and
want to be separate. Move away from other people. Yeah. Other people are horrific.
Which is well worth watching. But I think you just do, you know, like I remember being in my 20s and the idea, you know, if I was like, sometimes, occasionally I'd go on holiday on my own because it was the only time I could get away. And I was too scared to go into restaurants on my own for the fear of looking...
Yeah, like, I think that is a thing that comes with a bit of age.
Yeah.
You literally don't give a shit anymore. Just don't give a shit. I'd sit there with food all around my face going, fuck it, I'm 50-odd. It doesn't matter, does it? I love... We were talking about this backstage. I like to... I love going to a museum or an arboretum. I mean, I happily wander around trees on my own, you know, piss about in my anorak. I'm a lesbian. I love it. I'm in my natural habitat. I'm in sort of, you know, waterproof clothing and a sturdy boot, just looking at a giant redwood. And I'm very happy. I'm very happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a weird existence, I think, anyway, as a stand-up. And the whole touring thing is, you know, even if you're with a support act and a tour manager, it's sort of still very lonely. And you've got this weird... end of day thing where, or you know, in the middle of the evening where you're the center of attention and a few hundred people around you, and then you go back.
And then you go back to, I know it is really odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was in Newcastle last week and I was walking down one of the main streets in Newcastle and Alan Carr walked towards me and I went, Alan? And he went, Zoe? I went, what are you doing here? He went, Grimsby, I'm in Grimsby tonight. And I said, a brother walked around Newcastle and. So we'd driven to Newcastle to avoid walking around Grimford. But we both had that slight mad look in our eyes, and people were like, oh, somebody I know, you know. Because, it's really lonely. It just does get very lonely. I think the trick is to sort of break it, not do too many in a week.
Yeah.
So three or four maximo. Otherwise, you go absolute feral.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think it is, you know, this was something we were talking about backstage, but I think it just is, the travel is so wearing and you know, like as you get older. And when I was thinking about it, when you started 20 years ago or so, and when we were younger, in our 30s, you would sort of drive to Yorkshire and back and not think about it. It'd be fine.
And now, mind you, I did drive back from Cardigan in Wales last night and got home at 3 a.m. And I get this sort of, I finished the show and I thought, there was a hotel there for me, and I thought, I could go now and get home by 3. And I sort of clamped onto the steering wheel like an insane praying mantis, and I was like, I'm going to fucking do this. I'm going to do it. And I had my sandwich, my crisps, and made it. But like one eye popped at one point, you lose an eye. But just to wake up in the morning in your own bed.
Don't you, on those long drives though, I always get to a point where I think I've died.
Yeah.
And this is hell. Yeah. I'm just going to be driving.
Yeah.
It's usually in Wales, so I'll just be driving through Wales. And that's what the afterlife is.
Yeah, that's it. Forever.
Forever.
Perpetually driving through Wales. And I saw a badger at one point last night. That was there. And you're like, was that a badger? Was it a werewolf? What is going on? And there was parts of the journey, because have you ever been to Cardigan? There's a beautiful art centre there, but it really is quite a long, 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 long way away. And the first sort of 50 miles of the drive back is, you know, through the Welsh countryside. Yeah. And I've got quite an overactive imagination, thus the job that I do. And at some point, you know, it was like 11 o'clock at night, it was pitch black, there was badgers, there was a couple of deers, there was an owl at one point. I was like, oh, an owl, you very rarely see them. And I did see one the other day at the Arboretum, because they had a bird of prey exhibition as well, which was thoroughly enjoyable. The things that man did with a bit of chicken on the end of a string. Anyway, at some point when I'm driving on my own, a voice in my head will go, don't look in the wing mirror, don't look in the rearview mirror, don't look at... Does anybody else get this? I'm like, oh... It's the devil clown, he's in the back seat, isn't he? I must have watched a film when I was young where a clown popped up in a back seat of somebody's car late at night, and now I can't get out of my head when I'm driving back from Wales at 2 a.m. I can't look in the back seat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The worst thing is you're about to wake up and find out you're still in that car.
That's it.
I
haven't even hit Cardiff. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it's, I tell you what, though, I am, having gone from a point where I never thought I'd be on stage again, because I didn't know how I was going to do it, to doing this tour, I'm so loving being on stage.
That's great.
I'm having a lot of fun. I mean, the audiences are hating it, but I'm not, they're not, the audiences are great, but I'm having so much fun, because it feels, after the last couple of years, it feels a lot purer? Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
There's no expectation attached to it for me. All I want to do is go out and make people laugh. That is it. I go from day to like tour date to tour date to tour date, and very much live in the present with it. And I'm so much happier on stage, and I'm really, really enjoying it. And I'm good. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah,
it's really
well,
good.
You know, it is, because I know it was, you know, as you've said, it's so that to have something that makes you lose confidence in yourself,
yes,
in that, to that degree,
yes,
is, you know, that is, stand-up is so much about that, and your stand-up especially, because you're great with crowd work and you're a great compere. You've been the Chortle best compere 2 years running,
and
so that's
they're bookending my so I just realized how short my trousers are this evening. I've just looked down, I look like a 14-year-old boy. Sorry about that. Yeah.
But so, you know, that, you know, you need that confidence. So it's great that that has come back, and that you're enjoying the job for what it is.
Yeah, you know, it's because somebody said to me at one point, why don't you just shave your bits of hair off that you've got left? And I went, oh, no. Because some people don't suit it, and I really wouldn't suit it. I would very much look like a war criminal. So it just, I would. It's, look at the face. It needs something around it. It, you know, certain women wear fascinators for a reason. Look over here, you know, and that's what my hair was, I think. I had nice hair. So, yes, it's, I'm glad I've got over that. I'm glad I'm able to get back on stage.
Yeah, yeah. And it was great that you did because obviously the lockdown, not you were meant to be doing your quiz show.
Yes.
And lockdown kind of scuppered that.
Yes, I just got so I was all set to do the first series of Lightning, which was a BBC Two quiz show, and it all got taken out. I ended up during lockdown driving a veg van for a while around London. It was just to get out the house, really. It was a Brighton company that was supplying places all around London. So I got a job driving this van, like a massive long wheelbase Mercedes Sprinter. And I turned up on the day, and the bloke who worked in the forecourt, he looked at that point like he'd even pre-lockdown, he'd been cutting his own hair, using a rabid dog. And he sort of looked at me and he went, "Can you drive a van? Can you drive a van?" And I went, "Yeah." And never driven a van before in my life. Turns out I couldn't really drive a van. I hit several trees, Richard. Wow. I hit several trees. They're quite long. They're long. They're much longer than you think they are. It didn't have those beep, 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 beep sort of indicator. It had a sort of poof when I hit a tree. I was like, oh, fuck, that's another tree. I spent a lot of time trying to push out dents in that van. But at one point, one day, I drove past in my van with the courgettes in the back, the production offices of the quiz show that I should have been doing.
Yeah.
And I drove past the London production offices where I'd been sort of 2 months before going, well, we're very excited to start filming. I was like, me too. And then here I was in my van driving courgettes to somewhere out near Heathrow. I was like, well, you couldn't write this shit, could you? There's a twist. Yeah. But we then eventually got to do the show. Yeah. And I loved it. It was great fun. I never knew I wanted to be a quiz show host. But
you've done quite, like me, you've been, and most comedians, we've been on the other side and been contestants on loads of these things. And you've done most of them.
Yeah.
It's sort of weird that these are the jobs now available to comedians, is moving into being a quiz show host.
Well, that's quite a traditional move, really, isn't it? I suppose you think Bullseye, it was more traditional for male comedians to move into that sort of environment. But Sandy did 15 to 1. She did loads of episodes of that. She did like 450 episodes, she was telling me. Right. So, but I think we're perfect at it because a lot of it is banter. It's just banter. It's comparing a room full of people and then asking them questions. And that's what we do. So I loved it. I really loved it. I really, really enjoyed doing it. And I like the cheesiness of it all as well. I had a really shiny suit and everything. It was brilliant. The theme music used to come on and I was like, it was like living a sort of fever dream. I was like, this is amazing. And in my mind, I went, oh, 10 series of this, this will be it. Then I can just sort of, you know, bugger off to Marbs and sort of chill out and sort of get a bit fat on a Lilo. We did two. And then we were, I think the technical term is axed. That's the term they always use in the press, axed. But I was very glad to have been given the opportunity
to do it. It's such a hard thing. I mean, you know, I think to hit that magic formula of the thing that will really work and will gel. And again, especially, there's so many of them. And I think, like, for a daytime one as well to take off.
Catch the imagination.
It's fun. I watched some today.
It was really good fun.
There's a sort of random element of just, you know, you get knocked out.
Yeah.
If the light's on you at the end and you could be the best person then.
You could be absolutely rubbish all week and still win. That's what I like about it. And that's what life's all about, isn't it? Yeah. It's great. It's great for the underdog.
So do you think, I mean, there's quite a lot of things coming up, right? I think you're doing, you've done a show that I didn't want to do, which was World's Most Dangerous Roads.
Oh, didn't you want to do that?
Well, I was doing this at the time and I had to cancel a couple of weeks of this. And I kind of was quite looking forward to the guests.
Yeah.
But also, I'm not a good driver.
You see, I'm a pretty good driver.
Yeah, well, if you drive...
Unless it's a Mercedes long wheelbase, and then I'm not a good driver. But, I got to do that with Joe Wilkinson. We went around Eastern Turkey. We filmed it in July, obviously, prior to all of the horrible things that have happened.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. It's such a beautiful country. It's incredible. We went up the Iranian and Georgian borders, and it was just stunning, really stunning. And Joe just makes me laugh so much. So much. He is such a funny, funny guy. We just laughed for, yeah, a week.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and avoided goats. So, yeah, it was great fun. Really cool. Good fun.
And did I read you doing Celebrity SAS?
Well, I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you, okay. Richard.
I saw it on the internet, so I don't think it's a secret.
It's a sort of gentle secret.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. Next podcast, I'll tell you about that.
Okay.
Yeah. That was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, everything's going. You know, it is. It's we were talking backstage about how weird lockdown was and how it sort of feels. I mean, hopefully, fingers
history.
Crossed.
It feels like history.
Feels like history, and it feels like this weird thing. But that story of you driving, driving past the production offices.
Yeah.
You could never, at the beginning of that year, you couldn't have envisaged.
No. And
that
I think
your life would change in that way. And then everything else that's happened to you as well. It's both, it was crazy.
If you are planning on having a massive introspective midlife crisis at any point, I can really highly recommend that you do it on the backdrop of some sort of global catastrophe, because nobody really notices. It's fabulous. You can get away with all sorts of shit, really. It's sort of, the pandemic just sort of provided a beautiful star curtain of distraction behind me as the wheels came off my life, and I feel like I utilize the time fully.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I have a lot of friends who learned a language and learned how to make sourdough. I went fucking mental and came out the other side a very different person, with all my own hair, but it's growing back. So,
do you think it would have happened if lockdown hadn't happened, though, or do you think it was the pause?
I do worry about that. That actually maybe it needed to happen.
Yeah.
So it would have happened at some point, and it probably, and the disaster for me would have happened. It would have happened at a point where I was really busy with stuff, and that lots of other things were going on.
Yeah, yeah.
But at least that's why I see it as a gift. It was sort of this expanse of time where you were like, let's just fully explore what's going on in your head. Yeah. Yeah.
No, so it's amazing, and it's, I think it's also amazing in terms of like the relationship breaking down, but then getting back together again. If that hadn't happened, it might not be a comedy show, I guess.
No.
There are comedians who do comedy shows about their divorces, but then. But.
Well, we're difficult to live with as well, aren't we?
We are.
We're assholes. I mean, why anybody would want to marry a comedian? I have no idea. We are so self-centered. We are just giant toddlers that. It was really highlighted to me when I moved into this flat on my own, right? And I remember the day getting the key and went, I'm going to be a strong, independent woman. I'm going to be a strong, independent woman, and I'm going to do this. And I got into the flat, and the Wi-Fi wasn't working, and I burst into tears instantly and had to phone my now separated from wife and go, can you come and turn the internet on for me, please? And then I couldn't get the bath to fill up, and I was turning the tap the wrong way. I had a plumber out, and he went, you turn it that way. I went, what? He said, what have you been doing? I went, I've been hitting it. I've been turning. He went, you do that. And then this water came out, and I went, oh, fuck, what magic is this? Who knew? So I think it was very insightful to find out just how useless I am.
Yeah.
And how patient she is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we've been able to move to a much better ground. Yes. A much better ground.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50,
luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And yeah. you've been doing some running as well, which I'm yes. trying to get back into running again, having had a little break from it. But you've done some like crazy distances. So you've done marathons, but you've done ultra.
I've done a lot of half marathons, yeah. And then during lockdown, I started running sort of marathon distance, but off road, but like slowly,
yeah.
like a sort of nana pace. But then, yeah, after lockdown, my brother and I did a run from London to Brighton. Which is 100 kilometres, which is, it's that. But having said that, it's the Southern Rail line, so it's often easier just to get there on your own 2 feet. Because I know I'm not going to replace myself with a bus replacement service in the Gatwick area. I'll keep going. So, he did that with me. It was absolutely horrific.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was horrific. It was awful. The first bit was easy, and I got in my head and went, oh, this is a piece of piss. We'll be done by lunch. You're not done by lunch. Oh, you're not done by lunch. Lots of horrible things happened to my body on that run. I won't give too much away. I talk about it quite extensively in the show. But
are you allowed to have a sleep halfway?
How long does it take
to run 100 kilometres?
Well, we sort of ran the first sort of 30 miles, and then you sort of run walk it, then it's run walk.
Yeah.
And then both of our knees went, and then you start sort of, then it gets dark. And then at one point I just went, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? I think we were about 80 kilometres in, and I was like, nobody's even forced me to do this. I wasn't even doing it for charity. I was doing it for myself. So why am I... What madness is this? But you're 80 kilometres in. You can't stop, can you? At 80K, no. 100K, you know. And then at that point, there were fewer and fewer people, and the people that we were passing who were on this race were predominantly they were sort of... middle-aged blokes clearly battling with some, like battling against themselves. I remember seeing one guy and he went, I got this far last year and had to pull out. Not this year. Not this year. Devil's Dyke's not going to beat me this year. I was like, the number of times I've said that. such a weird thing to do. It was such a strange thing to do. It becomes like its own little mini existence because you're running and walking for so long that you've forgotten what life was like before. Do you know what I mean? You're like, this is what I do now. I just do this. I just do this and shit in fields. This is what I do. Yeah.
So how long did that take?
18 hours. It was, yeah. People do it in 12. Like, proper athletes do it in 12. Like, but 18 was... I was quite pleased with that.
I just can't imagine.
I don't know what. No, why would you want to do it, Richard?
It's nearly three marathons, is it?
It's two and a bit marathons, but over sort of, you know, and because it's London to Brighton, right at the end, it's Ditchling Beacon, which is like that, so it's practically straight up and it's pitch black. And and they give you all of this advice before, you know, make sure you've got a proper head torch. You're like, yeah, okay, I'm not an idiot. And I put my head torch on and the battery just went... And I went, I clearly am an idiot. I'm now 80 kilometres in and in complete darkness. And so I had to run up Ditchling Beacon using the tiny little phone, my phone. Like, this is not how ultra runners are supposed to do it. One blister, not bad.
That's amazing.
Pretty good. Yeah. Lost a toenail, but one blister. Yeah. But I think that's pretty good, don't you? Yeah, I think that's pretty good. A friend of mine did it, and she put talc on her shoes. Big no-no, I learned, because basically over 100 kilometres, that turns into abrasive glue. She two stumps now is what she's got. That's what we call her. Two stumps, doozy. There she is. Yeah.
Were you running before? Was this
half marathon.
Yeah.
And I like it. It keeps me sane, but I'm really bad at it. Like, I've got no mobility. I look like a sort of cross between a house brick and a pug. It's a miracle that I move. Like, there's no... there's no delicacy to my movement. It's like, wow, that's, is that just being blown along in the breeze? What's, you know, when you see runners and their heels are sort of slightly kicking the back, their backsides as they're going, you go, what a beautiful human movement that is. What an incredible, graceful human movement that is. And then I catch sight of myself in a restaurant window. I'm like, what the f-? Like a penguin escaping a house fire. I'm like, but, you know, I keep going.
Yeah.
Just keep going. Keep going.
I think, you know, there is something about it that once you're in there, once you're fit enough to do it, I keep on just losing the fitness and then having to start again. I did like 5K yesterday and I'm...
That's pretty good.
It's all right, but I'm feeling quite bad.
But on the positive side, is there less chaffing because of the one ball?
Yeah.
You see?
I'm not sure my ball's chaffing, but no, it's more comfortable.
You see, definitely. There you go. Every cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all right. I think, you know, if you're a serious athlete, I think you should take both off.
Yeah. Really go
just
for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, it's much more in the middle than it was.
Okay.
When you had two. So. So it's,
there you go. Less Vaseline.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm looking on the bright side. Don't
absolutely.
Worry. It's all fine. You've got to look on the bright side. I haven't brought my emergency question book out with me, but let me see if I can remember some emergency questions.
Right.
If you, Zoe Lyons,
yes.
were like a caterpillar and could go into a chrysalis and change, you know, a caterpillar changes into a butterfly. I don't know if you're aware of that. If you could go into chrysalis and change, melt down and then change into anything you wanted to be, what would you come out of your chrysalis as?
Oh, wow, okay.
It's quite a hard one.
I think snow leopard.
A snow leopard?
Yeah.
Right.
Very beautiful, quite rare.
Yeah.
Can shift, quite strong.
Yeah.
Lovely eyes. Nice coat. Nice coat. I think I quite fancy that.
Yeah.
I mean, it scared the shit out of the children that were expecting a butterfly, obviously, in primary school. And I think I'd do it just for that as well, just to see six-year-olds absolutely cack their pants as an unexpected snow leopard pounced on the teacher's desk.
Yeah. Do you think it'd be coming out of a tiny chrysalis, or do you think the chrysalis would...
I think it'd be quite a small chrysalis, so then they'd be really surprised when... like one of those indoor fireworks. Like, wow, full-size snow leopard.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
If all the art galleries and museums in the world, I know you like going to museums, got together, and arboretums as well, got together and said, we love your work, we want to give you, you can have one thing from all the museums and art gallery in the world and you can keep it.
Right.
What item or painting or artifact would you like to possess?
I'd like to have the triptych of Hieronymus Bosch's Garden of Earthly Delights.
Okay, yeah.
I've gone quite serious with that one.
That's good, nice.
Because it's like a sort of incredible medieval Where's Wally? Because you just keep looking at it going, oh, look, there's a lady with a dick on her head. And, oh, there's a fish with rabbit legs and it's... I find him fascinating.
Yes.
Yeah, and if you took a magnifying glass... Because I saw it in the Prada in Madrid, but obviously there's a big group of people all around it, and you're like, oh, get out of the way. Because you really want to have a proper look at that. You want to get your little magnifying glass out. And you do wonder what he was on. Because no internet. That all came out of his mind. That's incredible. God, there must have been some toxic paints he was sniffing or something. Like the sort of medieval equivalent of sniffing Sharpies or something. Because he just... Madness. Beautiful, beautiful madness. So I'd have that up in the living room.
Yeah.
And then every now and again just have a go over and have a long wander at it and go, oh, look, there's a man with a arrow going through his nose and a fish up his bottom. Wonder what that signifies. Means something to somebody, doesn't it? Yeah.
It's a very good choice. You started out as an actor, right? So you went to drama school before you... Was it before you became a comedian?
Yeah. I mean, you say started out as an actor. I went to drama school.
Well, you've done some acting. Oh, you've recently... They say you should never play God.
Oh, I did that just before lockdown. Yeah, I played God. Yeah.
How were you? What was the...
I was awesome. Yeah. It wasn't a stretch.
did you method act it? Did you research?
I really enjoyed doing that, actually. It was challenging because it was basically sort of an hour and a half monologue.
Right.
And for a menopausal lady, that's a lot of words to remember. I had two angels with me on the stage. They had smaller parts in the show. Gabriel, the guy who played Gabriel, Tommy, was a beautiful guy. Every now and again, he could see that I'd completely lost where I was in the script. And I could see the sort of look of panic on his eyes. And every now and again, I learned just to turn to him and go, Gabriel, If you were God, what would you feel like saying right now? And because he was much younger and had much more elasticity of brain, he usually remember what the hell I was supposed to be saying. He'd say, I might mention the ark, my lord. The ark, and then I'd be off again. Yeah, yeah. I enjoyed doing that.
Yeah.
I had to sing a song at the end.
Okay.
Not a singer, Richard.
No?
Not a singer. And I remember saying to the director, I'm not a singer. And they went, oh, everybody can sing. And then I tried it and they went, all right, clearly not. And it was a big sort of show number. So I... Do you know the Chinese website Alibaba?
I'm not aware of it.
Okay, it's sort of like a Chinese version of eBay, I think. Okay. And there's a billionaire boss that owns it in China, and every year he puts on a massive concert for his own employees.
Okay.
But he can't sing. But he does it with the confidence of a billionaire.
Yeah.
And knowing that they're not going to complain or leave. And so I just had to sort of summon him.
Right.
So every night I sang the song like I was a Chinese billionaire to employees that were too scared to leave the room. And it seemed to work for me. Yeah.
Are you glad?
I think it's how Barbara Dixon did it. There's Elaine Page used that as well. Yeah.
And do you find, you know, it's interesting to have to go back to a script.
Yeah.
If you're being an actor, you obviously can't dick around too much. Whereas a comedian, you can do anything you want to do.
Yeah, and I do. I don't know how you write your shows. Do you write them? Do you write them line for line,
no.
Or do you work them out and then?
I sort of used to write them and then try to learn them, and I used to be able to learn, but I can't learn lines anymore. So I literally just have an idea and do 30 gigs until it's
set.
Right. Yeah,
and then will you write it out?
No, and then I change it still, and then I'm still as I'm touring. The only way I can keep touring interesting for myself is every night trying to absolutely perfect every. Element.
Every bit of it, yeah.
So not just the words, the speed and the tone and the volume and pauses and what you're doing with your hand. You know, like that made touring... I used to get bored during touring because I wasn't doing that. I was just doing the show.
Doing the show and not playing with it.
And there wasn't many people in rushing through the second half. Very fast.
Yeah, so there's a train at 5 past. I can be out of Didcot if I get this done quickly. La-la-la-la-la, the end.
I haven't done a tour show for 5 years. But I really got into what's the best word. What is there anything else in this idea? Sometimes you break it by stretching it too far, and you never get back to where you were.
Yeah, but would you come off stage and then write those words down? You say, okay, that's fast, because I'm the same. And I sometimes. So when I started this tour and I was just about to go on stage for the first time, I looked at my notes and it was like 4 words. And I went, Christ, that's not a lot, is it? How am I going to get an hour and a half out of that? It just says alopecia, car, flat. I mean, Jesus, where's the jokes in that? You know, but they are all in there. For me as well, I never write it out full length. Never write it out. Yeah, and again, every night on stage, you sort of try and tweak it.
I think you lose some good stuff as well. I mean, there are comedians who like tape it, listen back to the tape, have someone with them to write down and come, you did this tonight, you did this tonight. I'm sure there's times when I've really perfected something
and then
completely forgotten what I did.
Yeah.
But mainly, especially going every night, or even like you say, three times a week. But if you're going out every night, it's sort of there and you get... But sometimes, I would tour and sometimes I'd forget a whole bit for a month and then suddenly go, there's that...
Yeah.
And it'd be the best bit of the routine. Yeah. You know, fucking hell, where did that go?
I did that the other night on stage in Newcastle. I was talking and my brain went, so, there's a bit later in the show that won't make any sense now because you've forgotten another bit. And I was like, oh, my God, but this bit was still talking. Like, the front bit was still talking. And the back bit was going, how are we going to crowbar that bit? And then, leave it with me, I'll have a think. Right, okay. And this bit's still talking. I'm going, we're going to have to do it pretty soon because we're getting nearer to the end of the... So that's all right, I think I've thought of a segue. So But I'll come off and I will write... If I have an add-on for a joke the other night and I'll come off and I'll immediately write just the word down and I won't forget that then.
I think the day... You know, sometimes when I've toured a lot, I think I've talked about this before, but the voice in your head starts trying to fuck you up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I had that in Cardigan last night. Yeah, the voice would just go, what do you think you're doing? Why do you think this is funny? And you're like, not now, we're on stage. Please, please, just let mummy work. Please, please don't. Don't do this now. Jesus Christ. Back in the day, people used to write proper jokes and proper setups and punchlines. Look at you, fannying around like some sort of menopausal clown. Honestly, where's the dignity? Aren't you ashamed of yourself? And I'm like, please, I'm trying to do a show. Yeah.
But I guess it's got to work like that because you have to be ready for whatever happens. Things are going to change.
Yeah.
So, you know, as the mouth's going, and once you know it so well, the mouth, and that's the danger. The mouth could be going and you could start thinking about something that isn't even the show.
Dinner.
And then suddenly come back and go, ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
Where am I and what am I meant to say next?
Yeah.
Sometimes you get too confident. But, yeah, that's, it is, it's sort of a, such a weird, but I find that fascinating, the creative process and the way that often on stage, even if you sat down and were writing something, you get on stage and you say it just perfectly in a way you would never write.
Yeah. It took doing the show, two shows before I went, oh, and that is the connection and that is the ending. Like I worked it out on stage.
Yeah.
I would never have made any of those connections or endings if I'd sat at a typewriter.
Yeah.
I'd know. A typewriter? How old are you? A typewriter? Jesus, Zoe.
Jessica Fletcher.
Yes. If I'd sat at my printing machine, dressed in my monk's outfit. Oh, each letter individual. This is why I don't do this, Sebastian. I don't do it. It just takes too long. But no, if I'd sat my computer and I tried to do it, it would never have happened. It has to be on stage.
And so how do you find, obviously you are playing the clubs a lot still.
Less so. Yeah.
Because we were talking about that backstage, about how, I don't think the money's gone up.
No, not since I started.
Yeah, I don't think the money's gone up since I started.
No.
I started in 1989.
Yeah.
I think the money was better in 1989.
Proportionally.
Mostly, not even proportionally. I think, better. More money than we get now. So proportionally, it's a lot worse. Obviously, because you're doing a variety of things.
Yes.
When you're doing stand-up, it's not necessarily for, paying your living expenses. But how do you think people are?
Well, it's changed, isn't it? It's all changing. It's like, because I said to you before we came on, I went, oh, I feel, it's harder for people. But then again, other things are different. Like, if you have a massive online presence, you can be getting branding work for, 10 grand a pop, where you're going, oh, I love this particular sort of, at least it's scouring pad again, just sort of indicating my age. It cleans up my typewriter beautifully. You're not what we're looking for, Zoe, in the TikTok generation. But look at the shine on my typewriter with the lovely scouring pad I've used. I'm going to use it on my brasses. There are definitely different ways that people are making money now.
Yeah,
it's harder, I think, doing it the traditional way in the clubs. And I think, as you get older and you do get more opportunities to do different things, then you grab them. Yeah.
It's interesting stuff. Cool.
This is like my tour show. It just sort of stops.
Yeah, just let's
the end.
My phone keeps on beeping. That's what's putting me off. What's this?
Are you reading your text messages now?
I've got a message.
Crikey.
A message from
it's really there. Playing with my imposter syndrome.
I haven't got my book here. I'm going to ask you an emergency question.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard without the book.
It is, isn't it? Off the top of your head.
If you had to choose between dating, if you were single again...
Yeah.
A woman who was a 6-foot-tall vulva.
Yeah.
Or
I love a Swedish car.
Or a woman who, instead of having... a woman who had a tiny woman living in a burrow between her legs.
Say that what? 6-foot-2 vulva?
Six-foot vulva. No, it's not 6-foot-2. Don't really call it.
Okay,
six-foot vulva.
Yeah.
Or a woman who, instead of having a vulva, had a tiny woman living in a burrow between her legs.
Oh,
and it's
goodness.
A burrow.
It's now, the number of times this has happened to me and I've been in this situation. I think only because of a scene from Mulholland Drive, the David Lynch film, where there were the tiny little figures behind the door, and it really unsettled me. I think the tiny little woman in the vulva, I'd never go there, just because it would seem a little bit haunted. So I'd rather stride about town...
With a vulva?
With a six-foot vulva.
Would, how much...
Well, listen, I mean, also, you know, it doubles up. I mean, you know what you're hitting, for a start.
Yeah.
And if you get, you know, on tour, makes a lovely sleeping bag.
Well, I like the idea of being able to climb inside.
Oh, yeah.
It's much better than a six-foot penis.
Comes with its own hoodie.
Yeah. But how far back... What does it include? Is that...
I don't know how far...
Are there kind of ovaries at the back there?
I don't know.
Where does the female genitalia end?
I need my head torch for that, but we all know my head torch is not too much.
That's
so.
Not gonna work. Okay.
But no, definitely. Would it come with legs or...?
No. It would shuffle along like a snail, like I imagine.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah, I prefer that to the little one. That's weird. That's just weird, the little one.
I mean, it's a threesome every time you go to bed, but one of the
people... No,
but
not in an equal way, no. They'd just be sitting watching like my Jack Russell does. Yeah. No, I don't like that. It's odd.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
I've seen a poltergeist.
Okay, well, that's a ghost.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean...
Or is it somebody's energy that's sort of manifested externally?
It's a good answer to this question. Tell me about the time you saw a poltergeist.
I saw a poltergeist once when I was at university and my friends... Paula and Penny and I were in another girl's room who was very ethereal. She had a very ethereal way about her. She used to sort of, she would drape things over her lamps to give it a sort of, you know, in her student accommodation to give it a sort of, I don't know, sort of more sophisticated feel. She was very, very, very intelligent and, you know, slightly odd. And we were in her room one night, the four of us, and she was at her desk, and it was thundering and lightning outside. And at one point we were chatting, and she did have this incredible aura around her, this energy. And at one point we were chatting, and a box flew off the top of her wardrobe, landed on the floor, and then moved across the floor rapidly about six or seven times. Like... And myself and my two friends, Penny and Paula, we always talk about it whenever we meet up. We go, did this happen? We all go, it did happen. So we sort of, you know. And it stopped, and it stopped in the middle of the floor. And my friend, who was the ethereal spirit, just looked at it and went, oh, God, not again.
Oh, God.
And it turned out that she had been bothered with poltergeist.
Wow.
Yeah, it was quite... It was. I'm glad the three of us were there because otherwise.
Were you all on drugs, though?
No. Probably one of the days we weren't.
Okay.
No. Probably one of the days we weren't. The bucket bong was very much in the cupboard. It was. It was very, very odd. It was very strange.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
There's been some spooky ones. That's hard to beat.
Thank you. I saw one in an Undertaker's once as well. I was waiting for a then girlfriend. Her father had passed away, and you know when they have a viewing room. It was in Glasgow, so they're quite traditional funerals. I think they laid out the body so that people could go and have a wee look. And I didn't want to have a wee look, and so I waited in the waiting room. But the door that led to the room where the body was, while I was waiting, they were in the office. In its frame, the door frame, it just vibrated so violently. It went in its frame. And I was like, oh, my God. It just, this vibrating door, and it stopped. And then the handle just moved down and then sprang back up again.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was either a juggernaut going past or that was some, there was something, and yeah, it was...
Or someone who worked at the Undertaker's
store. It was like that. I do this every time. They absolutely cack their pants. Absolutely shit themselves. Wait for it. You've got to wait just a minute for the door handle release between the vibrations and the moving. That's fucking wait for it. Yeah.
Cool. Are you worried about dying and getting old? I mean, not in that order.
I'm 51.
Yeah, you're getting on, Zane.
Getting on, innit? No, I'm worried about dying.
No.
Well, it all depends how I go. I really don't want to die in an embarrassing way. I really don't want to do that. Like, I face-planted the pavement a year ago, and I thought, God, if I died then... I got out of a taxi, and what happened was the top half of my body went, right, we're ready to leave the taxi, and the bottom half of my body went, we're quite happy here. And so it stayed in the taxi, and the front, my top half left the taxi and then just smacked onto the pavement, and I really hurt myself. And I thought, God, if I died doing that, just people would just piss themselves at your funeral, wouldn't they? You were like, oh, God, she'd been on the tequila again. I don't want to die in a silly way.
No. In a heroic way, you could die being a hero.
Not even heroic, just even here, if I just sort of just slide.
Yeah.
Fuck, that would make a good episode,
it would
wouldn't
really
it, Richard?
If you could.
That would make a good episode.
There's been a couple of guests I thought that it might happen.
Have they gone? Has she gone? But I'm not worried about getting old. I'm enjoying getting older because actually, having been through what I went through and the I've got rid of a lot of stuff that wasn't serving me.
Yeah.
And I actually feel very light on my feet these days.
Yeah.
I feel very light on my feet and more agile of brain.
Well, I think your standard, you say in your show and Next Up, if you want a happier life, reduce your expectations.
Absolutely. Happiness equals success minus expectation. That's what it is. Denmark's often voted the happiest country on earth, and apparently that's an equation they live by.
Right.
Happiness equals success minus expectation. So if good things happen, that's great. And if bad things happen, you know, whatever. It's that ability to live in the present is so important, so important. And I think pre-pandemic, I certainly, for one, lived in an imagined future whereby I was happier, I had more money, I had, you know, greater success, I had... I think every job I did and every bit of work I did and everything I did was somehow sort of... I thought I was layering down for this imagined future that I thought I was going to have.
Yeah.
And then when it all abruptly comes to an end, you go, there is no future. There is absolutely no future. There is literally now... And you can revisit the past, but you wouldn't want to live there. But all you have is this second right now. That is it. And once it does sound a bit sort of wanky, but once you've... I try very, very much just to inhabit the moment.
Yeah.
And then you can't fear death.
I think that's very good. And I think it's interesting. The good thing about getting older, I think, is making those realizations, realizing, you know, that your personal happiness is more important than anything, especially, I think, within comedians, because the comedians are so focused
tuned into
on
what they do and who they are.
Focused on themselves and focused on
and
you
there's
know,
so much
supposed
more out there.
Success.
So much more out there. Yeah. You know, it's part of who I am. Being a comedian is part of who I am. But there's massive other bits of me as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have any of that, but it's... I'm just going. No, but it's true. It is true. Well, look, Zoe, it's really lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you
and
too.
And I'm glad everything's turned out okay.
And I'm glad you're well too.
Me too.
I'm very glad.
And
stop copying my hair. It's insensitive. Stop it.
Look, if I my hair's everything. I can't. It's all I've got. Look, it's really fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on, ladies and gentlemen. Give it up, the amazing Zoe Lyon. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Zoe Lyons. Thank you to Scant Regard for playing this music. I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. Thank you also to Chris Evans. Not that one, he's moving house. He's doing too well. He's moving up in the world. He's going all right. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for having us and the whole of the Rahulastapa crew for all the hard work they put in making this happen. This and thank you to Kathleen McKeegan again. Thank you for your fantastic website, rahulastapa.com. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and Go Faster Strike.com production.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for fantastic downloads and books, and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club and get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, RichardHerring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It'll make me feel sad.